Welcome back to the Jennifer Hammond Show on SiriusXM Urban View.
This is Jennifer Hammond, and you know I love helping you find information that helps you make good decisions in real estate. One way or another, we can all make a difference in our neighborhoods, and I love highlighting people who are doing exactly that. So my next guest, Emily Kadick, is the executive director of the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Coalition. Say that fast. Affordable Housing Tax Credit Coalition, where she leads advocacy to support affordable rental housing financed using low-income housing tax credits. So welcome to the show, Emily.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
I'm so excited to have you because we're always looking for ways to really make sure that everyone has a home. And affordable housing is an issue, I hate to say, everywhere, all over the United States. And I broadcast out of the SiriusXM studios in Washington, D.C., but it is a problem. I grew up in Key West, Florida, and it was a problem in Key West. It seems to be a problem no matter where you go, is to be able to find that affordable house. And so I'm curious, Emily, with your background, I was reading about you. Why did you decide to get into this?
That's a very good question, and I think you already kind of answered the question, which is that affordable housing is an issue that affects all types of communities, and it's, for someone who works in policy, I think a really interesting area because it is not as high on the national radar in terms of conversation as I believe that it should be, though that's been increasing lately, and we've seen a lot of presidential candidates, for example, recently introducing some new affordable housing plans, certainly more than we've seen in previous elections. So I think it is becoming an area that is now getting more of the attention that it deserves. But when I started my career in D.C., I was working at the Department of Housing and Urban Development and realized that this is a policy area where it's possible to have a really big impact across the country and in all types of communities, and one where we really need people to be focusing on this work because it is there's a lot to be done, and we're trying to elevate it in the national dialogue.
And I think it is what you just said, it's being discussed more and more on the national level, which I think is partly the most important part is people understanding. If you're not experiencing it yourself, a lot of times people are just not aware of it. And it shocks me sometimes to realize, wow, if you understand, if you, even in just the real estate purchasing side of things, if people can't buy, first-time home buyers can't buy, then guess what? Nobody else, all the other markets freeze, whether it's somebody trying to move up or whether it's the luxury market, it doesn't matter. You have to always have affordable housing. It's crazy to think that at some point we're going to have these things where you're priced out of the market. No, that's not okay. You can never be priced out of the market. There has to always be housing that you can actually be able to live in the house and still be afford, to live and have food and, live. And it's just so often that's overlooked when people are continuing to build in an area. You see the urban sprawl or some of the areas where the cities have changed the face so much, and it's great to have beautiful houses, but we need affordable housing. So let's talk a little bit about the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Coalition. What is it?
So we are a trade association of about 200 organizations and businesses that develop and finance affordable housing using the low-income housing tax credit. And we're not just any 200 organizations. We represent a really significant share of the affordable housing industry. So our members have financed or developed well over half of all affordable apartments that have ever been built in the U.S. So
wow.
We represent all parts of the affordable housing community, from the state agencies to investors and developers and everyone in between. And our mission is to expand and strengthen the low-income housing tax credit, which is our nation's primary tool for financing the development of new affordable housing.
So how do organizations become part of the coalition?
We're a membership organization, so we've recruited a lot of the top leaders in the affordable housing space, and we're also a part of what's called the Action Campaign, which is a Big Tent organization of over 2,000 organizations and businesses. That's also a grassroots coalition that anyone can sign up for by going to rentalhousingaction.org. And together we all work in partnership to we've introduced legislation that would expand and strengthen the low-income housing tax credit. We were really thrilled that part of it got enacted last year. We got the first expansion of the low-income housing tax credit in a decade, and we are hoping to build on those gains and do even more this year.
Wow. And I think it is something that, again, you know, the more you can bring people together so that they're also getting to be part of it, again, experiencing it, understanding it, that's all part of having a solution, and a solution that actually is very workable in any community. So I'm excited that you bring together organizations. How is the coalition financed?
We are a membership dues-based organization, our members help support our advocacy efforts.
And then do you have donations as well? Do you do fundraisers?
We do not.
Okay. And can you explain a little bit about how the low housing income tax credit, how it works?
Absolutely. So the low-income housing tax credit is our nation's, really, as I mentioned, primary tool for building any new affordable housing. And the way that it works is the federal government gives credit to the states each year based on their population. And then each state has a housing agency that will determine what types of affordable properties it wants to see built. So that can be things like, we want to see more rural developments this year. We want to do more veterans housing. We want to focus on areas that have been impacted by natural disasters, things like that. And they have pretty considerable influence on which types of properties are financed, because it's an extremely competitive program. So for every one credit development that moves forward nationwide, there's three applications that were submitted. So the states really have a lot of leeway to really set what types of applications they receive that will be competitive. And then once developments are selected to receive the credits, they receive a 10-year stream of credits that can be taken off of corporate tax liability, and developers exchange that stream of credit to investors who give them the upfront equity to build the property. And one of the things that's really clever about this program is that the credits don't even start flowing until after the property is up and running, so there's no risk to the taxpayer if the property isn't completed and up to code and meets all of the requirements. No tax dollar has been spent on that property. And then anytime during the first 15 years of the life of the property, credits can actually be recaptured if anything falls out of compliance. So there's a lot of private sector oversight to make sure that the credits are flowing as intended. It's got the lowest foreclosure rate of any real estate asset class. Less than 1% of these properties have gone into foreclosure over the life of the program. And then even beyond those first 15 years, there's a full 30-year affordability requirement for all of these properties. So that's kind of how the financing works. But then the end user and the real impact of this program comes with the tenants who are able to move into apartments that they can afford. So in general, tenants are people who are making at or below 60% of area median income. So this can go all the way from formerly homeless veterans to people like firefighters and teachers and minimum wage workers and communities. So it serves a really diverse array of populations, serves a diverse array of communities. It's not just, as you mentioned, an urban coastal city problem. It's something that affects every type of community. And it's served over 6.7 million households, we estimate, since the program was created, in those 3 million apartments that have been developed. So it's really become a model for a lot of other public-private partnership credit programs since then, because it's really worked well, and it's proven, and we've got a very sophisticated community who are building these properties, and again, millions of families that have been able to, for often for the first time, be able to afford their homes.
Yay!
Exactly.
Everybody should have a safe, happy, and affordable home. I mean, it just...
That's exactly right.
I feel so passionate about that. So excited. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Emily Caddick. We're talking about the Affordable Housing Tax Credit Coalition. So excited. I want to make sure you know their website is taxcreditcoalition.org. taxcreditcoalition.org. So Emily, one of the other things that you talked about, I mean, wow, the numbers of how many you've helped is amazing. But you also mentioned you kind of went fast, so I want to take you back there. But I do the same thing, especially when I get excited about the success of a program like this, especially public-private partnerships, I think is one of the secrets to success in housing, period, but especially in affordable housing. And you talked about veterans. And of course, veterans in a lot of times are a very vulnerable group because they just, a lot of times when they're coming out and they're transitioning out, unfortunately, a lot of them become homeless. I've done many shows on the many, many causes about that. But will you talk a little bit about how the coalition works specifically with veterans?
Absolutely. So veterans are a population that requires often more than just the roof over their head. And certainly we need to be making sure that we're providing affordable homes for people who've served our country. But a lot of people who are returning often need other supportive services, whether it's mental health or substance abuse or counseling to help get jobs, things like that. So we've done a lot through the low-income housing tax credit program to make sure that when we build housing for veterans, that there are those services that are necessary to make sure that they're successful. And one of the nice things about being able to use a credit that actually produces new buildings as opposed to, say, having a veteran move into an existing building that may have other types of tenants is you can have a whole community of veterans and services that are designed just for them. So there are a lot of really amazing examples of this around the country, and through some legislation that we're promoting this year, we are hoping to do more to help the low-income housing tax credit serve even more veterans since, you know, like you said, everybody deserves a safe and affordable home, but especially the fact that there are people who've served and don't have that is really something that, you know, we're focused on making sure that that's not the case. And I mean, there are, you may have seen over the past few years, there's a few cities that have actually ended veteran homelessness.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of agreement that, you know, homelessness is an issue, or housing affordability is a pretty, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, but if you start with a small and, you know, a targeted population like veterans, it is actually solvable. And so we're trying to do our part there.
Yes, and I think what you said, I mean, the numbers are still just staggering to me as far as the homeless population in veterans. And we've actually had some different people on the show to talk about very specific areas that have ended veteran homelessness. And it is, as you said, it is just unbelievably appalling sometimes to look at the numbers. I know even on your website, you talk about 58,000 homeless veterans on any given night. I know, and I've seen that in the statistic of many different places where on any given night, over 50,000 veterans are homeless. But the other one, the number that a lot of people don't talk about is there's an additional, and you even put it on your website as well, the additional 1.4 million veterans that are at risk for becoming homeless. And so those are huge numbers of again, an area that we really need to find a way to help more and more.
Absolutely. And, you know, that risk of becoming homeless is such an issue that I think is not necessarily what people picture when they think about affordable housing. I think a lot of people think either you're homeless or you're housed. But what we've found, and if you've read the book Evicted that came out a few years ago by Matthew Desmond, I think it did a really great job of illustrating just how many people are so close to becoming homeless. Maybe they're one missed car payment away from ending up in, you know, a cycle of debt that makes it so they can't pay their rent, or one medical bill away from not being able to pay their rent, or any of a number of unforeseen expenses. There was that study that came out recently saying most people, most Americans, are not able to cover an unforeseen $400 expense. And so what's the first thing to go? Sometimes it's nutritious food. Sometimes it's medication. But when it accumulates enough, sometimes it ends up being rent. And then people are evicted or have to keep moving, which makes it harder for kids to succeed in school. So there's just a lot of people who aren't homeless currently, but because their housing is so expensive and because so much of their paychecks, often more than half, is going towards rent, sometimes it just becomes impossible to keep up. So it's a major problem for veterans, and it's a major problem for many people with low incomes. The latest estimates are that there are more than 10 million households in the U.S. that pay more than half of income on rent, and those are the people we consider to be in that risk group.
Right. And it's so important to just make sure that we're, again, finding ways to have affordable housing in every single community. So looking forward, how do you see the coalition helping to make sure that affordable housing tax credit is continued? I know every once in a while we're worried about these stopping. How do you, I know you said you talked about proposed legislation and other things. What do you see in your crystal ball of the future?
So we're very grateful that the low-income housing tax credit was retained in tax reform, which was probably the first time in decades that anyone had really looked at all the credits on the table and said which ones are in and which ones are out. Outside of something like tax reform, it's pretty unlikely that anything would happen that would eliminate the program, but we're, of course, remaining vigilant at all times. But then what we're hoping to do is go beyond just making sure it continues to exist and trying to actually expand the program and make it even stronger. So there's a bill that was just reintroduced in both the House and the Senate in June called the Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act, and it's got bipartisan co-sponsors on both sides. We've got Senator Cantwell leading it in the Senate along with Senator Young. And then in the House, we've got Congresswoman DelBene and Congressman Marchant. So we have only had this bill out for about 2.5 months, and we've already got close to 20 senators and 75 House members signed on to support this expansion and strengthening of the credit, which is great. It's legislation that was introduced before, and I mentioned that we got some of it done last year, but there's a lot of need out there. So all told, this legislation would help create another more than 500,000 affordable homes over the next 10 years than we're going to be able to create under our current levels of production. So as I mentioned, we need at least 10 million more affordable homes. This by no means would solve the problem, but it is a really important first step towards starting to at least amp up those resources that we know work so that we can begin to make more of a dent in the shortage of affordable housing that's out there.
Yeah.
And in addition to expanding the program, we are trying to do things like make it an even more effective tool for different types of communities and populations that are harder to reach. So, for example, if you're building affordable housing in a rural area or in a Native American community, you'd be able to get some extra credits for those to make sure that they pencil out. If you're serving extremely low-income households, like formerly homeless veterans often are, you'd be able to get more credits for those too. Things like that, that where we do already serve these places and people, but we want to make sure that we're doing even more.
And you mentioned in the House and the Senate, you had who were the leaders? If people wanted to reach out and kind of find out more about that and support those bills, who did you say in the House and the Senate are working on that bill?
In the Senate, the lead senators are Maria Cantwell and Todd Young. And in the House, it's Susan DelBene and Kenny Marchant. And The bill is called the Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act.
Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act?
Rolls off the tongue, yep.
Improvement Act. Okay, Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act. Okay, good. We will follow up with that as well, and we'll make sure that we put that up on the social media to make sure that people can find out how they can get involved. But lastly, let's go ahead and would you tell them about your, I mentioned it before, but your website and your social media if they wanted to get involved and help you?
Yes, thank you. Our website is texcreditcoalition.org, and our Twitter handle is at AHTCC Coalition. So AHTC Coalition, I should say. And we have a lot of news about what's going on in affordable housing and resources for how to advocate for the Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act. And one thing that may be of interest to your listeners who are involved in real estate is on our website, we also have a photo gallery of examples of affordable housing all over the country in every state. So I think that there's often an impression of what affordable housing looks like that is not matched by the product and the quality of product that we're putting on now. So I think it can often be surprising to see just how well some of these new affordable developments blend into communities and are the sorts of things people would really want to have in their neighborhood.
Yeah, I know often people are like, not in my backyard. And yet, if they really take a look at it, I think that that is something that they can look at it with a new viewpoint and a new eyeballs, so to speak, and maybe a new attitude. So, Emily, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here, and I really appreciate you elevating this very important issue of affordable housing.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be back after the break with more of the Jennifer Hammond Show.
There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
This is the Jennifer Hammond Show on Sirius XM Urban View.